Welcome back to A View from the Couch. My name is Rich, and Jen is not here today. Thank you for asking. Can I take a message? No. Okay. So I actually have a co-host here. You know him from the world famous Great Disturbances podcast. It was so famous, I almost forgot what the fuck the name was of the podcast.
So seminal that you need not even speak its name.
Right. Yeah. Right. Needs no introduction can't remember it. Yeah. Fucking. Well, anyway, he was my co-host on Great Disturbances, the Star Wars podcast, where we basically made jokes about B. Arthur for, what, 2 years, whatever the fuck it was?
100 episodes of B. Arthur jokes.
No, that's right. 100 Wars, episodes of B. Arthur jokes. Yep, that's right. So it's Paul Moderman. He's playing the part of Jen. He was supposed to play the part of Jen during the Cornetto trilogy, but somehow Palpatine returned and stole the fucking first episode.
I think the universe demanded that those episodes be dropped because they were like too hilarious and insightful to exist. Like it was too good.
You know, right? You're probably right.
It would have shut down the rest of the podcast business had those episodes come out. Joe Rogan would be like, "Well, I'm not going to do this anymore." Conan O'Brien would be like, he'd be like, "I don't need more friends. I got these guys. I'm done." Right? Yeah.
Guys, I think they fixed the podcast thing. It's done now. There's no more podcasts. We don't need the podcast anymore.
We fixed podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'd also like to tell the listeners that during the course of this episode and recording, I am legally and to the best of my ability psychologically inhabiting Jennifer Davenport's role entirely. So Rich and I are married for the course of this episode of the recording of this.
Yep, for the next hour or so.
And then after which we will immediately become then divorced. Mm-hmm. At which point I will forsake the name of Jennifer back to being Paul, and the erstwhile Jen will then reestablish her role, reestablish her dominance as it were, and rejoin the marital fold with you.
Right.
At that point.
Right. Until next week when we do 28 weeks later, right? And then you will again retake the role of Jennifer for, is that next week?
28 weeks later?
Yeah.
Which, 28 days wait, later. Wait.
Uh-oh. What's
what
going on?
What did we watch this time?
28 days later?
28 days. With Sandra Bullock, right? That was what we were doing, right?
How'd you mix that up, man? That's terrible. You're in big trouble.
Well, I have got a lot of notes about comedy drama here, so I think what I'll do is I'll just say my reflections on 28 days while you talk about 28 days later, and then we can just edit them together as though I'm saying things that's perfect. Wow, that's so profound. Paul is seeing things that no one else is seeing in this film. Wow.
I think that's a great idea. And since you're doing 28 days and I'm doing 28 days later, I think you should go first.
Yep. So perfect, because that was my plan too.
No, but you guys couldn't see his face, but his face said, "I didn't think this joke all the way through. Uh-oh. Where am I going to go with this?
I should have prepped for this bit better." Okay. Okay.
That was good. That was good.
But you know what? Fuck it. I'm taking the ball. Yeah. Here we go.
Okay.
Rich, you got to tell me your history with this film. What's your history with this, with 28 Days Later, which is the real movie we're going to talk about?
Oh, 28 days later. Yeah. Okay. Not 28 days, because I've never seen 28 days.
Yeah, you're missing out.
Sandra Bullock. I know. That's why I've heard. Yeah, I've heard. I'm not a big Sandra Bullock fan, but I know. I'm a blasphemer, I guess. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I'm going to call Sandy later. I'll let her know.
Sandy.
And she will be probably fine with that, I suppose.
Right. She'd be like, "Who?"
She'd be like, "Who?
I don't fucking care."
She'd be like, "Who are you? Stop calling me."
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get my number?
And don't call me Sandy.
Only my mom calls me Sandy. So my history with this movie is that I saw it on a shelf in Blockbuster one day, and the cover struck me. This would have been back in 2003 timeframe when it came out on DVD here in America. And I grabbed it and went home, immediately popped it in and fell in love. Thought it was a great flick. And it actually is kind of the start of my love affair with Alex Garland and Danny Boyle. Like, I hadn't seen Trainspotting at that point. I hadn't seen anything else that Danny Boyle had done. I guess he hadn't done a whole lot besides this. And I think The Beach and Trainspotting. Oh, he did Shallow Grave. So I lied. I did see Shallow Grave, but I didn't realize who he was.
Fucking liar.
I know. I'm a fucking liar. I'm a fucking liar.
That may actually become the basis of our divorce. Oh. Is your lies.
Convenient. And then we can what do they call that when you like make up? There's like a legal
reconcile. We can reconcile.
Reconcile. That's it. Reconcile. Yeah. That's the way. Yeah. It's tax season. My brain is so fried that I couldn't think of the word fucking reconcile, guys.
You can refund with so yeah.
Rebate? Tax rebate together? You guys get tax rebate?
And it's like a marriage rebate. You're getting a marriage rebate. Yeah.
When two tax returns love each other very much, they come together and they produce a rebate.
One of them grows a penis and they they just fold over. Yep.
Fold over the other one.
Listeners, I bet you had no idea you were in for such highbrow movie goodness.
The brow is so high that I don't even have a forehead. That's how high the brow is at this point. Okay, so how about you? Have you seen this movie before?
I know that I have seen this movie before. Okay. And it was relatively near to when it came out.
Okay.
But I don't remember whether I saw it in the theater or on like a television. I don't remember that at all. But sure, I really enjoyed it back then.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
I think one of the cool things about this movie is that it kind of helped reignite the zombie genre.
It
you know?
Very much was part of the reawakening of that.
Yeah, I think, and oddly enough, Shaun of the Dead, one of the other ones, was part of that as well. Shaun of the Dead, this one, the Dawn of the Dead remake that came out, those kind of were the ones that pushed the zombies back to the forefront. And I've always liked zombie movies. Some of my favorite older horror movies are the Romero zombie movies from, you know, the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so this kind of piqued my interest. And there's actually quite a bit of, you can feel that pedigree kind of in this movie as you're going through the Romero stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm sure people have probably said this all over the place, but this is me coming way late to the party of being, you know, knowledgeable about movies, but I'm sure that this movie paved the way for Shaun of the Dead to exist, right? To get funding, to be made, right? Like, because Shaun of the Dead is 4 or 5 years later, and
no,
if this
two years later,
no, I thought it was 2006, right?
No, 2004. It's oddly enough celebrating its 20th goddamn anniversary this year, which would have been great to have the podcast episode, fucking OneDrive or whatever the hell it was that stole the. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm not.
Yeah,
gonna
yeah, no,
you. I'm
no,
sorry.
That's
I'm sorry.
Either way, 04 or 06.
Yeah.
Still,
yeah.
I like maybe not its existence in being written, but very possibly it's getting financed and distributed may owe something to 28 days later reinvigorating the genre, right?
Yes. Definitely Dawn of the Dead had its way paved by this. And I think what we're getting at this point, like the early 2000s, is people that grew up with those Romero movies and like they're in like grew up with them and were fond of them. And then having that like in the forefront of their mind as they're becoming filmmakers or as they're finding their footing within like the first 10 or so years of their career. And saying, you know what, I want to bring zombies back. Let's do this, or let's do a fresh take on zombies or something like that. So I think you're absolutely right. I think this is the kickoff, and without it, honestly, I don't believe that we would have had the zombie renaissance that we had. I think you're 100% right there.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't like that time, you know, I have a hard time remembering like last week. So I don't remember 20 years ago very well, but like, I definitely remember, generally speaking, like just all of a sudden zombies are back.
Yeah.
Right. As a thing. You know, anyway, so yeah, so like, and I'm sure several movies contribute to that, but this one is a big part of that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say, I would go so far as to say that this movie also is influential in getting George Romero money to make other zombie movies, because he made a second trilogy of movies that he started in 2005. So I would say
Oh,
that this
yeah.
movie really paved the way for that too. So the snake swallowing its tail kind of a thing, right? They're paying homage to Romero and making it possible for Romero to make more things for them to pay homage to next, 20 years from now. So
That's funny.
So we already talked about Danny Boyle. We talked a little bit about Alex Garland. Do you know much of Alex Garland's?
Don't know much about Alex Owen's body of work.
Okay, I'm gonna read the list to you, and you tell me if you've seen them and if you enjoyed them at all. So we've got, as a writer exclusively, 28 Days Later, obviously. Then Sunshine, that would be the 2007 movie with Cillian Murphy, where they are traveling to reignite the sun.
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. All right. So I
Is
haven't
that a
seen
good
that one.
one? Okay.
It is pretty good. Yes, it is good. It's got a kind of a batshit crazy third act that it's pretty divisive. People are kind of either they love it or they hate it. Then he did an uncredited rewrite of 28 Weeks Later. Then he did a movie called Never Let Me Go, which is it's based on a Japanese novel, I think, about these kids in the future that, oh Lord, it's kind of like romantic tragedy kind of a thing, I guess. Yeah. The movie Dredd, the
Oh.
Judge Dredd remake, he wrote that, and he is the uncredited director of the film. He completed the film when the director, Pete Travis, when he left the set. Yeah, he
Well,
directed
there
that
it
one.
is. Okay. And then, of course, oh, well, I mean, while you were saying that, I Googled him too, and I was like, oh, yeah. And then there's Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yep.
Yeah.
And Annihilation. Have you seen that one?
Didn't see that one.
Oh, that one's pretty good. That one's got Padme in it, Natalie Portman. Yep. And they're in like an alternate dimension kind of a thing. And there's this huge bear thing. It's just batshit crazy stuff. Men, which is an exploration of, it's really a weird thing because it's a guy making a movie about how women feel around guys kind of a thing, you know?
Oh, interesting.
It is, but it's batshit crazy. And I kind of love it for that. And then the new movie that he did was Civil War, which is out just now. I haven't seen that one yet.
I haven't seen that yet, but I keep hearing
Yeah.
about it.
I do too. And just announced in pre-production 28 years later.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah. So there's going to be a third one of these bad boys.
It won't be too long until that's like legitimately the case anyway, so you
Oh,
know,
yeah.
there we go.
Yeah, exactly. It won't be too long. What do we got? Another, what, 6 years? No,
Another
wait.
6 years,
Two?
yeah. 2002 to
Yeah.
2030, yeah.
Yeah. Craziness. Yeah, so I didn't really know this was going to be my introduction to Danny Boyle. After this, I saw Sunshine because he wrote, not because he wrote it, but because Danny Boyle directed it. I think I spent a lot of time chasing Danny Boyle, thinking, "Boy, he's good at this, right?" And not that he isn't a good director, but I think what I was looking at was the writing, because there's a point where he doesn't work with Alex Garland anymore, and you can tell, like, the writing
Oh,
is
really?
not nearly as good. And when I discovered Ex Machina, that's when I was like, holy shit, this is the guy that wrote
This is the
28
guy.
Days Later? Yeah, this was it all along. So we also have in this, in this flick, we've got Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson, and Christopher Eccleston.
Pretty
Like
good stuff.
that's
That's a
that is
solid
a
crew. That's
that's
a
a really
solid crew.
solid crew. Yeah. I mean, Naomi Harris, to Americans, nobody, right? At this point. She would eventually become Miss Moneypenny in the Bond series. And Cillian Murphy obviously is going to go on to become Scarecrow. Brendan
A number of
Gleeson's Brendan
things.
Gleeson. Yeah. Yep. And then of course Christopher Eccleston would be Doctor Who at some point. I don't know exactly how far in the future that is from this movie, but yeah, I mean, they're all noted British actors, but n pretty unknown to Americans, with the exception of Brendan Gleeson at this point. So let's get into the flick.
When I watched the movie this time, because I haven't watched it in the interim. It was when I saw it back when, and I saw it now to prep for this episode. I must have missed the chimp part before,
Oh.
because I don't remember seeing it the first
Okay.
time
All
around.
right.
The
Fair,
first time
fair.
around, my memory is of, like, Killian waking up in the hospital. I did not
Right.
have any memory of the chimp stuff. And when I saw the chimp stuff, I wondered to myself, is the movie better or worse for having had the chimp stuff? And
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And I don't know how to phrase that, because, like, to me, it was, and I don't care when it wasn't, that section was neither good nor bad to me. It just was there this time around. But, like, I perfectly understood the premise without the chimp stuff the first time around.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah,
So
absolutely.
part of that, so part of obviously part of that section existing in the film is either an editorial, like, maybe we should make sure people understand it's a rage thing, or it's also, or and or it's trying to kind of say something too, right? Because they have the one chimp who's, like, strapped down in a chair or whatever, like, watching the videos of violence and
Yeah.
stuff like that, right? Which is, like, is that, like, does that lead to a virus somehow? Does watching films lead to a virus? Like,
Yeah.
it's an interesting, it's interesting to me to layer that onto my experience of the first time around, both from the standpoint of, like, oh, okay, I had an incomplete film beforehand, before in my head, but also, what is the purpose of that scene, I think? It's just something I think about with this one.
Yeah, I think so. I was trying to be analytical of this opening because I tend to praise this movie a lot, and it's because I have a lot of like gushy feelings about this movie. It brings back good memories for me, which is an odd thing to say about a movie about the end of the world. But I think you're right. I think this opening doesn't serve to do anything that Selena's discussion later doesn't already do. But I think what this does is it opens us up for the use of the way that the way that they use the title. The title is both setting the time and telling you the name of the movie at the same time. Because by the time, like after the chimp is banging on the glass at the very end of the attack in the Cambridge facility, you get the title of the
You get
film
the
down
little
at the
28 days
bottom.
later.
Yeah. As a postscript, and it's gonna get repeated again at the
It gets
end.
called back, or not. Yeah. From my first experience, it wasn't a callback to
Right.
28 days later. It was the, but yeah, exactly. Okay.
You're like, that's the longest it's been for me to ever see a movie before they put the title on the screen. Damn.
This is going to be a long one, you guys.
Holy shit, they're not done yet. So I think that it is repetitive and unnecessarily so, but I do like the way that they use it to introduce the title. And give us that time setting that this that it's not just a name, it is literally 28 days after the first bite of infected primate to human before the world is just fucking over.
So what this does, it all it did was change my experience of it too, because the first time I saw it, because I missed that chunk somehow, I still assumed that Jim waking up in the hospital, I still anchored in my head 28 days from whatever happened, right?
Oh,
I still
okay.
assumed that it was, like, yeah, this is 28 days later, because shit's fucked, right?
Right,
And
right.
nobody is around anywhere. So I was like, oh, okay. So whatever
Yeah.
happened must have happened 28 days ago,
Right.
considering the title of the film, right? Yeah, it's so, yeah. Anyway, this is not really probably a very interesting critique, because it doesn't, like, it didn't really change my experience of the movie too much, but it does add that little, the bump of that to beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So,
The
okay, yeah, so then smash cut to Cillian Murphy's cock on the
right.
hospital bed.
Yeah, 28 days later. Why? Okay, so here's my question. Why is Jim naked?
Yeah, so in my head, I was like, this is one of those things where, huh. Did you ever play You ever play like Fallout 3 or anything like that, or
Yeah.
Fallout New Vegas? And you would go into like the wrecked out buildings, and you the player could like look at the computer terminals that were still turned on. You could like read people's diary entries of stuff or whatever, right?
Right.
And
Yep.
it would tell you something that would explain. Oftentimes, it would explain why the building was in the state it was in. It would
Right.
explain why there was a desk over there, or why there was a hole in the like what the
Right.
story from 50 years ago would tell you why the building was that way. So my assumption is like there's a story, just not told as to why there's no
Yeah.
blanket on him, right? Like,
Yeah. Yeah.
because he's had his bicycle accident or whatever, and he was in the hospital. He that happened to him prior to the outbreak.
Right.
Outbreak happens, he's in a coma or whatever, right?
Yep.
So at some point in that process, somebody who's freaking out or whatever takes the blanket off him for some unknown reason and then is killed or runs away or whatever somehow. And
Yeah.
so, like, he has been forgotten about, but the blanket was grabbed or fell off at some point. And so that's just the way it was for
Interesting.
him, I think.
Okay.
Because like for it to just be gratuitously no blanket, that'd be a different story, right? You would expect that more with like women in film. Women in film get their nudity as there's just kind of often it's just gratuitous, right?
Right,
Often it's
right.
just there's boobs because people like to see boobs,
Right,
especially men,
right.
right?
Yeah, and
And it happens.
my misogynist ass just had to ask why I was gym naked, but I never ask why a woman's naked. Why
Yeah,
is
well, but I
that?
mean and like there it's a I mean, who knows whether that's supposed to be a commentary on that or not? I don't know.
Possible.
Probably is, but the other side of it is like there's a story that just isn't told, and maybe we're supposed to think or not think that there's a story to it, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, there is a key that was slid under the door for him, the locked door that he finds. That's how he can escape the room. So maybe that person
Oh, I
took the
forget.
blanket off
How did I
to
forget that
keep
part?
him
Yeah, okay.
cool, because I know that they say later that the electrical grid is down, and so maybe the person that was leaving him there took the blanket off of him to keep him cooler, maybe giving him
Oh,
a shot at surviving or
because the
something.
elect okay, because okay, yeah. And then locks the door, leaves the key under the door
Yep.
or
In
whatever
case he
in the
wakes
room or
up.
whatever. So they
Yeah.
say, hey, I'm giving you a chance, buddy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, that could be a cool little side story or whatever.
Hey,
Yeah.
Moon Lake, 28 Days Later, Infinities, right?
Yeah.
Right.
For which the vast majority are just people dying. It's just people getting killed because there's hardly anybody
Yeah.
left.
That's true. That's
Yeah.
true. So Jim wanders out of his room. He of course gets clothed first, and then he wanders out into the London day and finds clues about what happened in kind of newspaper headlines, and like there's a wall of people's pictures that were put up there by their relatives, people that were looking for their
Yeah.
relatives. And
Yeah.
what's interesting about this is that is okay, so it's eerie, of course, but because we know that this movie was filmed during 9/11. Like 9/11 was happening while they were shooting. I think this scene is what I heard Danny Boyle say in the commentary. They shot this almost sequentially, and they started filming in early September. This occurred on September 11th, this scene where he finds
Right.
this wall. If I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken, but if I'm not, this is still going to be a great story.
I
But
heard that that was during the scene where they were up in the apartment building with what's Brendan Gleeson and the other character.
oh, okay.
I heard
All
that it
right.
was then, but
Okay.
that was not from Danny Boyle's lips. That was from somebody else. Because
Okay.
I popped in a podcast of this movie while I was driving back from a business trip
Okay. All right.
in preparation for today. And what they said on that podcast was, that scene was when 9/11 happened or shortly after it.
Yeah.
And so people were like, kind of like, oh, we're up in a high rise right now.
Yeah.
Right. Which is sort
Oh,
of surreal
sure.
during that
Yeah.
time. Right. Like, because nobody was going up in fucking elevators
Right.
on those days. Right. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. So it made me think that you know, eventually, like within the year of this being filmed or whatever, we were going to see this stuff cropping up in New York. And like these posters, these pictures and stuff that were on the walls.
Yeah.
Now they, of course, they based this on apparently an earthquake in South America that like people were looking for their lost loved ones after this massive earthquake. But I obviously the 9/11 parallels don't stop there. You can read 9/11 into whatever you want here, but I just think that I find it interesting. Waking up to a changed world is an unintentional metaphor that came about because of when this movie was filmed and what happened shortly into the beginning of filming, you know?
Yeah.
Because we as a world woke up to a changed world on that day, you know?
For sure.
And I'm not saying that, like, I don't know that 9/11 matters to people in, say, India, but I think that politically the world changed a little bit during that period of time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it personally affects people, but I think that we are all in this new world. We all live in a post 9/11 world now, you know, whether we like it or not, and whether we're associated with it or not. It just struck me this time that it is an unintentional metaphor now.
Yeah. I would have thought that there would be more bodies laying around.
Yeah.
I mean, I can kind of see where they wanted to address that because they had a bunch of bodies like in that church that he was in.
Right.
But like, when you think about just how many people there are in the fucking world and the speed of what happened, I would have thought there'd be bodies laying around.
Yeah.
On the streets.
I think what's confusing is that later Mark and Selena are going to kind of give different like stories about what happened. Like at the beginning, right? Like Selena's going to talk about how it kind of started small and it kind of built. And then by the time it was over, that's when people started like scattering and started like leaving. And so I don't think that everybody's dead. I think that the survivors left England.
So in this formulation, many, 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 possibly even most people survived.
I don't know that many survived, but I know that there were, I mean, next episode, we'll talk about 28 weeks later.
Cause I haven't seen that one. So yeah.
Okay. Okay. Maybe I won't talk about that too much then, because I think it'll be interesting for you.
Don't you open your fucking mouth or I will divorce you so fast.
Well, shit, it's not the first time it's happened to me. I think what we had was, you know, Selena calls it the Exodus. That's when the Exodus happened. Yeah. So I think that to me, Exodus means a huge mass of people.
Huge
leaving,
people,
right?
Number of people leaving. Yeah.
So I think what I'm taking from that is that there's a lot of people that left England. I don't think that means that they survived, because she later says that before the radios went silent, we heard about an infection in New York. We heard about infections
Paris,
in
New
Paris.
York. Yeah.
Right. So like even the people that got off the island to the mainland weren't safe.
They were still in
at
danger.
That point.
There
right.
too.
So I think that like the people on the island left, and whatever was left of the, you know, the infected were still there, obviously. And then they went to other places to die, you know.
So if that's the case, then that means there's a story for why the people who are still there are there, right? If people were able to leave and there was an exodus, that means there's a reason that Mark and Selena and Brendan Gleeson's character and his daughter, I forget their names.
There's
a reason that they are still in where they are, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad we're talking about this, because like I tend to think a lot about like the logistics of things when I think about zombie films, right? If it's true that there was a huge exodus, and if I was a father who had my daughter in that situation, I would have done everything possible to get on with the exodus. I would have tried to get onto the boats or whatever that were leaving, right? So there is a story. If it's true that there's a huge exodus and many, many, possibly most people left, there's a story to Frank and Hannah not leaving.
Yeah. and Selena and
Because
Mark
if there's like if there's basically nobody else there, and there are four very healthy people who are not insane, who seems like they weren't homeless or whatever before the events, then there's a story as to why they are still there.
Also, most of the places aren't looted. Like, nobody took the food at that grocery store.
Yeah,
Nobody
that
took,
grocery store was
like,
insane to me.
yeah,
A
it was like
month later,
stacked.
it's pristine. I mean, they do a good job of showing like the vegetables having gone bad or the fruit or whatever, you know. But I was like, so either it's the so this in my head, the whether the movie says it one way or the other, I'm not sure. But in my head, the logistics are different. In my head, what Selena says, I'm just looking. So if you think about how fucking fast both the infection happens, like if I cut myself and I bite you, or you get hit with the blood in your eyeball or your mouth or whatever, and like 10 seconds later you're a fucking rage zombie, that's way faster than other zombie films typically do the zombie spread, right? Because another, like, you have to die first, and you kind of like it's days, and you're like, oh, and then you die, and then you wake up. These guys are like, you get barfed on by a rage zombie. 10 seconds later, you're a barfing rage zombie, and then you fucking sprint as fast as you can to the next non-infected human and barf in their face and bite them and whatever, right? So in my head, the spread of this, there's no way there could be a small start to it, because the spread is so ridiculously fast that, think about a metro area. If the spread time is 10 seconds, and as soon as you're infected, you sprint to the next person to infect them, it would be over in a day. It'd be over in a day.
So question then, because later, okay, so framing for the question.
Yeah.
Later, Mark is going to give an example of what happened when he lost his dad and his sister. And they were trying to leave. They were trying to get on, I think, a plane or a train or something. They were trying to get on a train to get to a plane to get out of the country.
Yeah.
And the infection spread like wildfire through the crowd that was there.
Yeah, through the crowd.
Yeah.
Like
So
that, like
what?
the common cold, a virus, that's not how a virus spreads, right?
No, not at
Yeah.
all. I don't think, see, here's what I'm thinking. I don't think we're dealing with like a virus as we know a virus. I think this is meant to be a metaphorical virus. Like, and I'm trying to frame this.
Well, and this is my fault too a little bit, because I'm being too logistical about the story, right?
But okay, maybe, but here's the thing,
You
like
know.
Alex Garland's movies, all of his stories are about something else. They're not about what you're watching. They're about something else, you know? Like
Yeah.
Ex Machina isn't about like AI coming to life and taking over humanity. It's about women taking power back from men. Toxic men and manipulative men, right? You think about it. Oscar Isaac's character is the toxic guy, and Domhnall Gleeson's character is the quiet but still manipulative guy who
Yeah.
clings to you, kind of a thing, right? And
Right.
she's like Alicia Vikander's character takes her life from them, you know? So,
Yeah.
like, to me, maybe this isn't necessarily a virus that we're supposed to think of as normally as like a virus. It's more of like a mental virus, something that is it while it transmits via blood and saliva, it is something that is mental. And I think about it as because if we're talking about rage in general, like there's a lot of angry people in the world, right?
Yeah.
And rage, like when you went, like anger can create more anger, you know,
Yeah.
just by witnessing it, just by being
Yeah.
around it.
Yeah.
So I think that what he's, I think he's using it as a metaphor more than anything else. And my brain is trying to fit it into well, it's a virus. How does it work? How does it transmit? How do you cure it? Right. Because later Selena is going to say there is no cure for rage. There's no cure for this virus. And that's the truth. There is no cure for rage as a human condition, right? Like, it just doesn't exist. Like, it's always going to be there, you know? I wonder if I put too much into it, thinking about it like that much, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying anything about the way you're thinking about it. I'm saying for me, my brain
that is exactly my critique of my own thinking of it, is that clearly there's a logistical element, or like a, okay, if the infection rate is one person for every 10 seconds and the population density of London is X, Y, like there's obviously, chill out, Paul. Clearly it's not the point, because clearly it's not the point because the outbreak is never shown.
Right.
Like, except for the after effects of it. So the outbreak itself is never shown. You don't like the movie goes out of its way to not tell you how it truly went down.
Yeah. You get conflicting stories about it too. But see, my dumbass while we were talking was looking up where's Cambridge in comparison to the other, thinking, okay, well, if it could have started small, right? If Cambridge is like this isolated area, sure, it could start small, right? That would make sense. So then maybe Selena's thing could be right and Mark's thing could be right. But like, my brain is trying to like fit it together like this, but it's not supposed to, you know?
It's not supposed to be like, even rethinking logistics of it, even though that's not the point.
Yeah.
You can see how there could be isolated outbreaks because like, clearly these rage guys can't like read a map, right? So if the little town,
navigate a freighter, you know,
so the little town or whatever where the thing starts, just the surrounding area of like the lab, right?
Yeah,
it's not like the rage zombies are like, okay, we got everybody here, where to next? Right, they're just like, I'm gonna go wander around snarling at everything, right.
Yeah, I think you're right. And plus, people aren't going to be expecting it to begin with, right? It's just going to be some person wandering around on the street. Like, think about like Shaun of the Dead, right? Like when he's on the bus and he sees that one guy walking through the park.
Yeah.
And he tries to eat that bird, right? And everybody's like, he's like, what the fuck? Like, it would be that kind of, like, if I saw somebody just flailing around and wandering like this, I'd be like, fuck that. I'm walking on the other side of the street. See ya, buddy. Yeah, so I think I probably shouldn't spend that much time trying to put that in there. And I think, but I think like when I first saw this movie, I didn't realize the kind of writer that we're dealing with here, the kind of writer that deals he's very much metaphorical in everything that he does. Like every movie that he's written has been an allegory of some sort for something else. And so which is weird because this is the first time I've seen this movie in a long time, and I've only really recently in the last maybe 10 years spent time with like Alex Garland's other works and like kind of realizing what type of a writer he was, right? So I guess I'm trying to reconcile what I knew before with what I know now.
But and I think, like, okay. So I think maybe I'm performing some, like, I'm like both therapist and therapy, and therapist and patient, as they say, in this case on myself here. And I think about this. So the place that I find myself going to with movies, zombie movies and things like this is the place of what would I do?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. And the what would I do is very logistical, because the what would I do part is like half my little notes here, or maybe not half, but some portion of my notes here are things that are talking about why would you do that in this scenario? Why would you do like whatever it is? But that's because a movie like this puts you in that place of if I was there, I would be thinking very logistically. I would be like, why are you dumping, just for example, like, why are you dumping that bottled water out or whatever, right?
Right.
Don't you, are you fucking crazy? Don't do that with the most precious thing we have, right? Or when Selena and Mark meet Jim and they're like, hey, just so you know, bro, everybody's dead. Your parents, they're dead. They're fucking dead, man.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I gotta go find my folks. You know, it, you know, that's not at all what he sounds like, but that's, you know,
no, it's but very like, accurate.
And it, if Selena is like kill or be killed lady at that point, if I was her, I would be like, okay, have a good time. You're probably going to be dead pretty soon. I would never in a million fucking years go with him in a super dangerous situation.
Right. But that's exactly what happens. Right.
That, and that's what she does. And so that, so again, this is maybe this is a, maybe this is a human psychological weakness of using a pop apocalyptic survival horror as the vehicle for something else, is because it puts us all in the state of mind of, or maybe not all of us, but it puts me and certainly I think many people in the state of mind of, okay, what would I do? Like it becomes that, like if you were in that situation or a situation like this, planning and surviving would be A1 top of the list. Nothing else matters.
Right.
And so then watching the movie becomes like almost inescapably a critique of what the people who are in the movie are doing. For another example is when they're going to, when they hear the radio message and they're like going to wherever it is, Manchester or whatever. And they go fucking camping outside.
Why would you do that, right?
Why would you? You have a car. Sleep in your goddamn car, right?
Sleep in the car. Much safer.
Sleep in the car. They make a campfire, and then they essentially take Ambien to like stay asleep.
Yeah,
that's so fucking stupid for the situation that they're in. That it takes you, that like, you have to struggle. Not struggle, but you have to say, okay, but there's also like, what am I watching for that the movie is delivering to me on other levels?
Right. Yeah.
So you have to, I think maybe the meta or the moral of the story is you have to be more careful with how you write zombie survival stuff, because if the characters do stupid things, you're going to trap the audience in thinking about how stupid the characters were.
And you know? Okay, so inevitably though, it's those stupid decisions that have to push, they have to happen to move the story ahead, right? Like if Frank doesn't like lose his shit and go off and like chase a fucking bird, he doesn't get the blood in his eye and he doesn't turn, right? And then Hannah doesn't lose her father, Jim doesn't lose his second like father figure of the movie, and it doesn't move in with, you know, West, right? So I think the stupid things are there to progress the story, but I think you're absolutely right. It makes the audience, it puts the audience into the story. It gets them interacting with it in a certain way,
it's,
right?
It's like a triple-edged sword. So it's it takes some deft handling, I think.
It's like that glaive from that movie Crawl. Did you ever see the movie Crawl?
Yeah, with the spinning star glaive thing.
Yep. That's what it is. Yeah.
Hey, by the way, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Now that we're just fucking wandering around here. Like we are now, so now we are the survivors of this episode of the podcast. Wandering around inside the movie.
Talking
about random things. Did you feel like going and having a Pepsi after you saw this movie?
No, but I could see why somebody would, right? They were fucking everywhere. Pepsi was everywhere. God damn.
Yeah.
That and Maltesers. Maltesers were everywhere as well.
Yeah.
But like harder to come by in America, I guess. You know.
Yeah.
That's funny though. That's funny because that's literally the first thing that he does when he gets out of the hospital bed is he goes to find something to drink, and there's a Pepsi machine wrenched open, and there's a Pepsi sitting there, and he drinks it,
and he's
with
essentially
the label. Yeah,
he's got the, okay, where's the camera there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like that Wayne's
World.
Did you see
that?
Yeah. Drinking,
like in
right?
Wayne's World. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty funny. Yeah. I.
You know what else is funny in
What's that?
survival movies? Let's just go there
Go with
because
it.
we're wandering around, so who cares?
Why not? Fuck
Graffiti. So when he's in the
it.
church, on
Yeah,
the
yeah,
he's
yeah.
going up the stairs, on the wall, it says somebody took the time to write out, "The end is extremely fucking nigh."
Yeah.
Okay? Which is okay, that's kind of cool, but if you think about it, some fucking guy trying to survive clearly had to go get a ladder
Yeah.
to do,
Yeah,
because
because it's
like
not,
it's
it's
way
up
higher
there.
than you
Yeah,
could
it's up there.
reach.
Yeah.
So he's like, "I'm pissed off and I'm gonna do some graffiti. But first, I'm gonna need a ladder. I'm gonna need a bucket and one of those bucket things that goes on the ladder so I can set the paint can down." Okay,
Yeah.
yeah. So he I can you can imagine like whoever's got this idea to write this graffiti first has to go loot a hardware store
Right.
and
Right.
then come back to the church, set the ladder up kind of near the stairs there, and then
Yeah.
go scrawl out, "The end is extremely fucking nigh," which is also like, why would you do that?
Why would you take the time to do that?
Why would you
Don't you
take the
have
time to
better
do
things to
that?
be doing?
Why, like, I mean, and maybe you feel maybe the ladder was already there or whatever,
Yeah, maybe.
or maybe of course, like we said earlier, we're not supposed to beat the shit out of the logistics here.
We're going
But
to.
hey, we fucking went there, right?
Yeah, guess what, guys? Well, okay, so I when you started talking about him going to a hardware store to get a ladder and get a bucket and get the paint, I started thinking to myself, well, what, like, maybe he, okay, so like maybe his intention was to like write "the end is nigh," right? And he went to the hardware store to get the ladder and get the bucket and get the paint, to get the paintbrushes. But the hardware store didn't have the ladder, the first one that he went to. So he had to go back to the church with the stuff that he already had and then go find another hardware store. And it was further away and he had to carry the ladder further. So like as he's like having to like search for these supplies to write his graffiti, he's getting madder and madder and more upset.
Like he's
By the end of it, it's not just "the end is nigh," it's "the end is extremely fucking nigh."
and then so here's how
Yeah.
this guy's fate is met.
Yeah.
Because he's getting madder and madder,
Yeah.
he like self-inflicts himself with the rage virus
Oh shit. Yeah.
because he's
Okay. Sure,
so
sure.
pissed about the fucking ladder of paint that
Yeah,
he bootstrapped himself into having the rage virus from the paint job.
my God, maybe they had it contained, and that's why it was like small breakouts. And like this guy pissed himself off so much that he like you said, he bootstrapped himself into the rage virus, and then he is patient zero for the whole thing. Maybe it's the priest. Maybe it's that priest that
Oh,
Jin
yeah, it's
runs across.
that priest.
The fucking
Yeah.
priest. Yes. Holy
But
shit, dude. We
by the
figured
way,
it out.
also, we
Yeah.
solved it. By the way, every time they come across a pile of bodies,
Yeah.
I'm like, people are not reacting to what clearly would be a terrible smell.
A
It would be
horrible smell.
god
Yeah.
awful smell.
Fucking just
Yeah.
nasty. I agree. I 100% agree with that. It's something that I thought about early on too. Like even watching this movie back then, I'm like, he is nose even isn't even wrinkling. Like this is a dude who's been out, didn't even know that the apocalypse happened. He wanders into a church and there's like thousands of dead bodies in this fucking giant church. That place would reek like
Too rotten.
nothing you've ever heard.
Oh my God.
Or smelled. I mean, like, I would be puking. I'd be yakking right there. I'd be like walking. I'd be like, "Hold on, hello." Yeah, no. I mean,
Is anybody here? Well, yeah.
bleh. You're 100% right on that. Like, this, like, and think about this: Frank and Hannah live in an apartment building, right? They live in a tower block, and the infected frequently try to get up there because Frank has like his battle armor that he like fights them off with, right? So these infected, he murders them, he throws them over the rail, they land down on the bottom. How bad does that place smell there too? Like,
Jesus. And
why would you stay there?
also, let's just jump to the apartment building.
Yeah.
What's the deal with the pile of shopping carts? Because
Supposed to keep the infected
it's
away.
not
Yeah.
stopping anything.
It's not something shit.
And they just climb right over it. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you think that Frank would be like, okay, this isn't working?
Yeah.
I got to find a different way. So maybe we found him like in between that, right? Like when Jim and Selena show up there, he's at that point where he's trying to like, he's like got a little pencil and he's writing it out. He's like writing out ideas, right? Like, fucking maybe I can get some plywood like in Dawn of the Dead, right? Or, you know, maybe, I don't know. I can drive a car through the front window or front,
but
front
it's
door,
but
right?
It's oh, this is perfect, this is perfect, but it's yeah. But it's like a crayon drawing done by a 6 year old, right? And so it's just like, it's
Yeah.
like Fort Jim, right? And it, or Fort Frank, right?
Fort Frank.
And
Yeah.
he's got like a castle drawing and like a little stick figure, him with a crown and his daughter is the princess, right? And he's got a sword or something like that, you
Yeah,
know,
yeah,
and
yeah. And it's got the
he's
word
like, and then
zombies
he's
on
like,
it.
he's like, got it, this is what I'm
Yeah.
gonna do.
Yeah. And like at the bottom, like over to the side, it's got the word zombies on it. It's got like a red circle, like that Ghostbusters, like no circle on it, right? No zombies, right?
So the rage guys are like, ah, oh, no zombies here. I can't.
Oh shit. It's like, you know, it's like those deer crossing signs, right? Like how the fuck do the deer know to cross there? Well, you know, they don't unless you put the sign up, right? So clearly you need to fucking need to tell them, right?
Because otherwise they're jaywalking, right?
Right.
Or
Right.
jay prancing or whatever,
Jay
right? And
prancing.
then can you imagine like a deer cop like huffing another deer for crossing where the deer thing is?
Yes.
It
Yes.
yeah.
And he's got, well, see, now because they can't drive, he's just got the flashing lights on his antlers.
Just on his antlers, yeah.
Right.
But he still has like a deer mustache,
Yeah.
like a
Yeah.
cop
Like,
mustache, yeah, like
okay.
yours, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, pull over. Get over to the side. Pulls the fucking deer over. The deer's like, what? Is there a problem, officer? Yeah, man. See that sign back there? That's where you're supposed to cross.
You know how
Your
fast you're
license with you?
prancing? Yeah,
Yeah, you know how fast you're. Have your license with you? I left it at home. Those your antlers, buddy? No, these are my friend's antlers. All right. Turn around. We're gonna put you in
around.
some handcuffs. He calls back up and like two other like younger bucks show up with their little things, right? So
And it's
fucking
Dasher and Dancer show up as
Dasher
the
and Dancer.
Because I
Fucking
think Blitzen
Hamilton.
is the good name for like the sergeant of that
Right,
crew, right?
yeah. Sergeant
Blitzen is like the
Blitzen.
grizzled sergeant
Right, right.
of the reindeer cop crew.
It makes
And
sense.
Dasher and Dancer are like the rookies.
Right.
Yeah. Oh boy, my first arrest.
And Rudolph is the weird one that nobody talks to, right? But like
Yeah.
turns out he has all the info later, right? We are way the fuck out
Or
of it.
it's like he's Detective Rudolph, right? He's not
Right.
like a beat cop. He's like
Yes. That's right.
taking notes about stuff, and he uses his glowing nose to like look at the crime scene or whatever, you know? It's like a, oh, it's like a
It
black
lights
light.
up.
It's a
Yeah.
black light. Yeah.
It's like a black light so he could like sue with the
And he's just so he's
guys, get
so
Detective Rudolph in
so
here.
get rough in it. So he's like just on highways. Just like
Yeah.
shining the black light at like the roadkill carcasses, right?
Looks like an inside job, Chief. It's like fucking deer on the side of the. You've got the fucking cops that like investigate the dead deer on the side of the. And then the crossover comes when like the deer decide they're going to take it to the humans. They're going to go to the humans that like they find the car that hit the deer and then they go and fucking prosecute him. They bring him to like deer justice. Like they go out to the woods and there's like a fucking. Like a fucking court out there with like a bench, like, you know, fucking Judge Deer with his fucking robes and
But
shit, right?
since they don't understand cars, they think the car did it, right?
Right,
So
right.
they, yeah. So like the
So they've got the
car,
car there, right? And it's in
yes.
handcuffs.
And
Deer handcuffs.
it's like sitting behind a little table, right? And
Yeah.
there's a deer who's the car lawyer,
The
the car
court-appointed
defense,
attorney, right? Yeah. The defense attorney for the
And
fucking car.
he's like, my client refuses to answer that question or whatever, you know, like whatever they
Yeah.
say. And yeah,
State your name for the record, please.
we can never get
Dog.
these guys to fucking talk.
Yeah. He's not talking, boss. Well, we've got him on with all the evidence we need. Look,
we got the fur and blood right here. Yeah.
Look at his bumper. We're gonna test that. If it matches this guy, he's going away forever. That's how repossessed cars, that's where repossessed cars end up. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how repossessed cars. Yeah. That's guys, what happens to your car when it gets repossessed.
Dear listeners, I bet you never thought you would learn that on this podcast.
They came for 28 days later and they got
Dear Justice. Dear Court.
Yeah, Dear Justice.
It's Judge Prancer, right? It's like Judge Judy, but it's Judge Prancer.
Judge Prancer, yeah. God damn it, dude.
And Santa is the chief of police.
Right, right.
Right, yeah.
Santa's like the human liaison.
Yeah.
Between the deer.
He's like, get me Rudolph in my office right now.
Yeah. Got Mrs. Claus on the phone tearing me a new one, and I'm over here having to bust your ass down again.
I want your badge and your antlers on my desk.
Hoof it over here now.
Hoof it over here.
They're going to make venison out of you, buddy.
So that is why Jim or Frank does not build a fort in his apartment building.
Well, he's sticking with the shopping carts.
Yeah.
He's sticking with the shopping carts because otherwise the deer win.
Otherwise the deer win.
Fucking win. Yeah.
And Frank knows this. He sees this.
Right. Right.
That's
absolutely.
That's why he stayed behind, right? He was like, if somebody doesn't stay behind, the deer will take over everything.
Right, because that's what's going to happen, right? Haven't you seen I Am Legend? I mean, come on. But Frank obviously saw I Am Legend, so
you know what does okay. So sliding back into thinking about this film, it strikes me just how instantly like priorities are utterly shifted.
Oh yeah,
right. Yeah. I wake up with a to-do list in my head of like the shit I have to do as a human in the USA 2024, having a job, paying bills, etc.
Sure.
That to-do list is utterly obliterated in this scenario, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like, I mean, and this is, I think, the point of many, or part of one of the points of many zombie movies is that you yourself, the survivor, are the thing that has changed just as much as the zombies are.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, well, look at Selena just by herself. If you look at Selena, when we first meet her, she is, like you said, badass, no bullshit. She's more than happy to kill you and move on with her day, as we see what happens with Mark, right?
Yeah.
And by the end of the movie, she has softened on that take a bit. What I find interesting about this movie is when Selena is on her own with Mark and it's just the two of them, she's cold. I wouldn't say heartless, but she is driven and she is willing to do whatever it takes to survive, right? When she becomes part of a family with Frank and Hannah and Jim, she is willing to do whatever it takes to survive and protect them.
Yeah.
So I think and another, okay. So I'm going to tie this. I swear I'll tie this together, but
bring it on,
baby. One of the things that I noticed about this movie this time through is the use of the word hello. Jim uses the word hello. It's like one of the first things he says in the movie. Right. So like not like excluding the pre scene, the prologue in Cambridge, the word hello is the first thing we see post credit, right? He says it so often and so many different times in the film, and each time it has a different effect. When he says it in the church, it's a call and response that kind of shows that there's still some humanity in the infected, right? Like they are still part of this, but they're just sick, right? This rage is infecting them, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Later, he's going to use the word hello at the gas station, but he uses it kind of like he's challenging someone to say it back to him. He's
like,
hello, you know? And
that's
when the kid comes after him. That kid actually says the words, I hate you.
I wrote that down.
That's the only time we hear an infected speak.
Yeah.
And it's only after Jim said hello that it attacked. Now, tying this back, there is, hello is kind of like the basic building block of human verbal interaction, right? Like if you think mm-hmm. about it in that, within this context, right? So if that's the case, the way that people react to that word is how you can tell who is going to be like helpful to you, who's going to be harmful to you, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I think that when you boiling like humanity down to that basic, like your first interaction, right? Sometimes you can tell if you're going to hate someone right from the jump, right? Yeah. Like I've seen people in my life where I've like, they've talked to me and I'm like, as soon as they say hello, you're like, oh, fuck that guy. Oh, fuck that guy. Selena comes off that way to begin with, right? Like if he says hello to her, she's more likely to tell him to fuck off than say hello back. But by the end, because she's had human interaction besides like just trying to survive, she's more willing to accept that. And in fact, they use that word at the end. That hello is what they use to flag down the plane at the end of the movie, right? They don't put help. They say hello.
Ah.
And so to me, it's like she is now willing to use that to greet people, to try and form a connection with people, whereas she wasn't forming a connection with people to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that's not a fully formed theory, but I noticed the word hello and the repetitive use of it over the course of the film.
Yeah.
And it's just been gestating in my brain, and I'm sure that at some point it's going to come out as like whatever it is that it's going to be, whatever its final form is. But it struck me that
I like that, that
humanity is like in that word, you know?
It's a reach out, right? Because they're reaching out at the end. They're reaching out for like, respond, human, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Possibly missed opportunity, or maybe just a good seed for future things.
Mm-hmm.
When Jim, I'm just looking at some of my notes here because we're kind of in this part of the movie.
And
we could jump around, but Selena gives Jim, I think, two or three rules about how to do stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And they don't really call them back, which, whatever. But you see in a movie like Zombieland, when Zombieland does the rules, they call them back, right?
Yes, yes.
They put it up on the screen when he does the thing that follows his own rules about whatever stuff, right? But what I kind of like our earlier discussion, I think about like the seed planting of things that follow it, is that there's like a genetic lineage here of the idea for that rule, the better use of that rules stuff. Maybe that has some genesis here from this movie.
Oh yeah, maybe.
That, right?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Could like be that. Totally cracked as a theory, but you know, like our discussion about this movie, like kind of turning the lights back on in the room of zombie stuff, essentially, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that I think is ripe for the plucking in looking at the movies after this one and seeing what are the seeds that this one planted in those things.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And it's not something that I even thought of, though. But you're right. And actually, I just watched Zombieland with Miles. And he loved it, by the way.
Yeah.
And I didn't even make that connection. I did not make that connection at all. Like the rules, and I think it's because they drop these rules so quickly. Like they're like, oh, okay, don't go out at night. Don't go out alone. And then they're like, we're going out. We're going at night.
You know what? We're
going
to go camping at night with a campfire.
Yeah.
Take some Ambien. Cool.
Buy some horses. Why not? Fuck it. We're good. It's fine. Don't worry about
rules
it.
Rules be damned.
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed here is that there are a few different homages to Dawn of the Dead, and the one that I really like the most is this fuel station stop on the way to Manchester. So I wanted to talk about that for a second, because there's quite the parallel there. I don't know if you've ever seen Dawn of the Dead, the original, but there's a scene where they take off in a helicopter from Pittsburgh, I think, and they take off in a helicopter from Philadelphia and they fly to Pittsburgh. And halfway there, they have to stop and refuel. And they stop at this place that's got like a little shop next to the refueling station for the chopper, right? And one of the characters, Peter, goes into this shop and he is attacked by child zombies. And that is exactly what happens with Jenny, obviously.
Oh, shit.
While they're getting fuel. And I love that they threw this in here. It's not cleverly disguised or anything like that. It's very obvious if you know the movie. But I love that they put this in here, because it's like, look, this is what inspired me for this scene.
This is the kind of thing that the Cornetto trilogy, the lost episodes of this podcast. The homage type movies that the Cornetto movies seem to be are a great way of pointing out that all of these genre movies, they plant seeds for each other.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like there's so much lineage. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to just segment yourself off to zombie movies, let's just say, and go from the beginning of time until now, you would see the growth of so many ideas play out in these movies. Right.
Yeah.
And you could make a like a genetic lineage essentially of the ideas. I mean, I know that people have done that. I'm not a movie buff, so I haven't done that, but I'm sure people have done that. And are obviously things that go on for that, right? So that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that stuff. I like that kind of stuff. It always gives me like it's in there for like movie buffs like me, but also for like, you know, like love letters to the people that were created, you know?
Yeah.
I want to talk about the soldiers, because by about the halfway point is when we lose Frank.
Yeah.
And the movie changes. I mean, we go from road picture to like Night of the Living Dead, right? Like Night of the Living Dead, where they're all in a house that's being assaulted by zombies by the end.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from road picture, we go from Dawn of the Dead to Night of the Living Dead. The thing about the way that we get here is I'm fine with it, but when you show up to this blockade and it's just empty, right? For whatever reason, we find out later that there's some, you know, suspicious reasons for why he moved everybody from the blockade to the mansion.
Yeah.
But when Frank and Selena and Hannah and Jim show up there and they're like, there's nothing here, wouldn't you just get the fuck back in your car and
keep
going? Go somewhere. Jim talked about an island at one point. I mean, I get that he's upset. I get that he's frustrated. We have to have that kind of trope of him turning and losing this patriarchal figure. But we talk about logistics, right? I would have gotten back in the vehicle and we could have been pissed on the road. You know, why are you still fucking around at this blockade? They're obviously not there.
Yeah.
And if they had made that decision, things would have turned out a lot differently.
Yeah.
A lot differently.
What percentage of men would be the way that these soldiers are?
Yeah, these guys
are. In terms of, these are bad dudes.
Yeah.
Like all of them, but the one guy.
Right.
Johnny Conscience or whatever, right?
Yeah. Farrell, the guy that, the thinker, right?
Are there legitimately groups of people that would be by random chance be together, like these soldier guys, and all be like, you know what would be great is if we were all rapists?
I don't think they see themselves as rapists.
I mean, is there legitimately a random group of people that would be so fucking stupid as to not see themselves as rapists in the, like, because like they are over the top vile in their approach to, oh, we've got women here. Right. Yeah. All right, let's go dig up some fucking dresses and we're gonna fuck them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, is that how it could possibly, is that, I mean, this is astonishing to me that, and maybe it shouldn't be because I don't know, but that all of them are like, it is acceptable to be this way.
Yeah. And I don't think that that's the only thing that's playing in their heads either, because at one point when Hannah and
Selena
are sitting at the table with them, when they're sitting around the table and they're going to have those eggs, and the eggs were had gone
bad or whatever. Yeah.
I don't remember if it was West or someone, they pointed to one of the girls and said, I hope you can cook.
Yeah.
So they're not there just to get raped. They're there to also cook and clean for these guys. These are guys, they kind of struck me this time, this viewing, as like the Lost Boys, where they needed someone to take care of them. Right? The best they could do was the guy Jones, I think it was, that was the tinner is what they call him, the guy that like basically made the beans and all that fun crap.
Yeah.
But he's bad at his job, right?
Yeah.
He needs a woman to help, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I keep thinking of these guys as the way things used to be, the old way of doing things, the old way where men were the ones that kind of said when things were going. Like, think about this. And I'm not saying this is like necessarily the case everywhere, but like marital rape wasn't even outlawed until the 70s. So like, if we're thinking about people who are thinking to themselves like, we're going to bring things back to the way they were, that's the kind of stuff that we were dealing with. That's the kind of stuff that women are going to deal with. People like Selena and Hannah in this movie are going to have to deal with that kind of thinking, because now we're quote unquote back in the Stone Age, because everything that was built is gone thanks to this virus. And these guys are like, well, back to the traditional gender roles, these normative ideas of, not normative, excuse me, these outdated ideas of who does what and who's going to do it when, who else says to do those things, you know? And in that vein of thinking, I don't think they think of themselves as rapists. I think that they think that they're genuinely owed the coitus that they're looking for. I think that they believe that. They were promised that by West at the very least. And
yeah,
I'm
no,
not at
I
all
mean,
saying
but I mean,
that this
no,
is
no.
right. But
I well, so I would agree with you on that though, right? Because
yeah,
I'm not sure what percentage of rapists would consider themselves rapists.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, however, like the way that they approach the situation with them, they clearly and consciously are saying, I will take sex from you whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
And I don't think most rapists these days think of it quite that way. Right.
Right.
It's a little more tacit to them. It's a little more, I'm owed this. And then they can like manipulate things around for them. I mean, of course, obviously there are cases of violent surprise rape, of course.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
this is violent. Take it from you, even when you are explicitly saying no. And we are all among us agreeing that we will take turns doing this. And that is of a different kind. It's still, I'm not saying that marital rape is not vile. Of course, it's vile and disgusting.
Yeah.
But that is a different thing than we, a group of people, are just going to take turns with you until we're satisfied.
Right, right.
Right?
Right. Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
this whole group of people has decided that we're going to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is the thing that I think is, whether they label it as rape or not,
yeah,
it is like, it is an act of sexual violence that is even more egregious, or it's differently egregious, I should say, than marital rape.
Yeah.
Also egregious, of course, also
Yes,
terrible,
yes.
of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I was using that marital rape part as kind of evidence that these guys are backward thinking in a way, I guess. And maybe I didn't get that across the right way there, but
no, it's okay. Like, I guess my thing, the thing that shocked me was that It felt like there was something other than there was something additional to backward thinking going on, right? Because I don't think backward thinking, because let's go back to the time, go back to the time when marital rape wasn't like a named thing, like it happened, but it wasn't, people didn't call it that. If a group of men had just said, "We're going to take that woman to a shed and just all take turns." Even in the time when marital rape was just not acknowledged, an
That was still,
act like that would still have been seen as vile, evil, right? So what I'm saying is, it's crazy to me that even if they're backwards thinkers, this whole group of people, except for Johnny Conscience, are find it acceptable to do that vile act,
Is
right?
it, yeah, do you think the lack of social parameters allow a certain type of person to basically just do whatever they want, be unhinged as they want to be, and
Because,
with what
like,
they feel like is no repercussions, obviously, because
yeah,
there's a societal breakdown and everything, so.
because it's kind of like, I felt like what the writer might have been trying to say was, you see, when there's no society, look how fast we become like repulsive to ourselves, repugnant to what we think we are. And the thing that I'm saying is, like, I'm not sure it would go that far among an entire group of people to that, right? But maybe, I mean, maybe it would, or maybe there's a different power dynamic going on where, like, the head guy and then like the clearly sort of the ringleader guy of the rape crew essentially have somehow cowed the rest of them into accepting and even taking up the mantle of, like, we're gonna do this. We're gonna do this vile act, you know, which
Cult, like
also,
a cult almost.
would, yeah, a cult, yeah, exactly, yeah, or a political movement akin to the Nazis, right? Who, like, I don't know the current scholarship, but I think people say that many more people knew what was going on Holocaust-wise than owned up to it. Right. In other words, like, I think it was said that, like, boy, I can't remember who I was listening to or what I was reading, was like, obviously the people running the camps knew. Clearly they knew what was going on. But many other people in German society also knew to some degree what was happening and just either stood by or were like, yeah, that should be what's happening. Right. And so is this a microcosm of that in some way, right? Where the ringleader guy is like your, you know, Himmler or whatever, right? And the leader guy is like Hitler or whatever. And the other guys are like the rest of Nazi society who were like, I don't know about this, but the leaders are doing this, so I'm here for it too. And then they get swept along with it, or like, this is probably taking this to a place that I don't know whether this was Alex Garland's intention or not, right? But like, it has, to me, it has shades of that. To me, it
I think
has
it's a
that,
sorry.
it has that, like, without the presence of the ringleader types, would these other guys be like, yeah, we're gonna do that? You know what I mean?
That's
That's my question too here.
it's a really interesting problem, right? Like it's something to chew on at the absolute least, right? Like
Because maybe I think you're also supposed to think, as a viewer, would I join the ring? Would I join the crowd doing this? If I was one of the dudes in the platoon, would I do
Ooh.
this? Because maybe what's being asked
Yeah.
here is for you to say, clearly there's like one dude who's like, yeah, let's do it. And that's the sick person.
Right.
But then the rest of them do it too.
Right.
Or intend to do it,
Nobody
you know.
sides with Farrell, the
Nobody
thinker.
sides with Johnny Conscience about this stuff. and then they kill him. So
maybe it's the thinkers versus the id
followers, the whatever. The id types.
Interesting. That's interesting. You know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking back to Selena's reaction to like what was going on, right? It wasn't acceptance so much, but like to her, it was like, okay, this is typical. We're going to do what we have to do to get through this, and we're going to move on with our fucking lives, right? Her reaction to the potential rapes, and in fact, the guy that was like trying to rape her in the middle of Mailer's, you know, rampage through the compound, her reaction to that was less visceral than her reaction to Jim killing that guy that was attacking
him. Yeah.
Like she, I mean, obviously she hesitated, but she was ready to strike, thinking that Jim was infected or that he would try and attack her as well. Meanwhile, she was willing to go along with this other vile act more so than she was willing to just kind of allow what was happening in front of her when it came to Jim's violence. And I wonder what that has to say about things. You know what I mean? Like, what are they trying to say there?
Yeah.
Is there anything being said there, or is it just some observation that I'm kind of backloading into it? But I don't think I don't think I'm reading that wrong. I mean, she definitely has a different reaction to Jim violently attacking the guy. She's shocked. She's not shocked by the guy trying to rape her.
Yeah.
She's just shocked by Jim's brutal outburst. I wonder if it's saying something about you expect brutality from strangers, not from the people that you are closest to. Because by this point, she is closest to Jim and Hannah.
Yeah, yeah.
And these other people are kind of removed from her, you know?
Well, okay, so this is I'm glad you talked on this thread, because I think this is connected to something else that I was thinking about too.
Okay.
Which is, there is a very clear moment. So go back to where they shoot Johnny Conscience at the pile of the bodies, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And then Jim like lays down in the pile of bodies and pretends to be one of them. So they go and he escapes.
Yeah.
And he climbs over that wall with the razor wire at the top, and he falls down the other side. That wall is also metaphorical for Jim, because once he gets over that wall, he essentially becomes fucking Batman.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
Or becomes filled with rage.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying about Batman, though, right?
Yeah.
Is
I got you. Okay. Yeah. 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 Okay.
But,
yeah.
But also like a ninja, like a rage ninja. Batman is a rage ninja, right?
Sure.
And so the next time Jim sees Selena, he has gone over a wall. He has transformed into a rage beast.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Right.
Sure.
Essentially.
He's not the same person
as she saw him, because he also developed like stealth skills, and like he goes from getting his ass kicked by what's his name to killing like six dudes, you know what I mean? So next time Jim encounters Selena, Jim has changed a lot. And it may be the case too that like Selena brings him back from the rage, from the Batman rage state, because if he's got that rage now, and he's going on and doing this, and he's doing like violent crazy things, and then he winds up like scoops the guy's eyeballs out to kill him, you know,
or
he's and gets him. The moment when he starts walking towards Selena, she's got the machete or the whatever, right, and she's ready, he doesn't do the hello. The thing he should have done in that moment is he should have just said hello.
Yeah.
Instead, he just walks toward her when clearly she is ready to fucking chop him to bits.
Right.
And you're like, I was like, bro, say something. What are you doing? You watched her hack a dude to bits.
Yeah.
She's clearly thinking, for way less than this. She's obviously thinking, am I going to have to chop this motherfucker up?
Yeah.
And then he just walks toward her.
Yeah.
Silently.
He takes one step towards her, though, and he does it quickly. He's not, he moves fast like one of these rage zombies.
Like the rage zombies. Yeah.
But he goes from shadow to light in that moment that he moves towards her. So in that moment of stepping towards her, I think you're onto something there, dude. I think you're onto something there. I think she is a cleansing element for him when it comes to his rage, that the rage that's overtaken him.
Yeah.
Not the virus rage, but like the rage in his brain.
Yeah.
Fuck, I think you're onto something.
I mean, Alex Garland is saying that they're one and the same, right? It's the virus or just you yourself losing yourself to rage.
Right.
They are morally equivalent, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no difference between Jim and Mailer in that last scene, really.
Yeah.
Mailer's a viral rage and Jim is the emotional rage.
And so you're right. And so when he steps into the light, because she has noticed, I think she said something about how she can see it in their eyes.
Yeah.
When people turn. And so when he steps into the light, she can then see his eyes. And that's why she stops the whatever. So maybe this is a choice then too by the writers and directors, is that until Jim gets to the light, since he is essentially a rage zombie at that point, he can't say hello.
Oh,
because he has been transformed of his own accord, but he's still transformed.
Yeah.
And he's lost to the rage. And then in the moment, that moment is when he snaps too. And he couldn't have talked because the rage zombies can't talk, except for the king. He says, I hate you. Well, so that's weird too, but whatever. But that's a baptism transforming light shining moment for him and her. But then it goes on to, well, we can get to this at the end. I have some thoughts about the end of the thing too.
Sure. I'm living in this moment that you're describing here, this idea that Jim is transformed by Selena looking at him, Selena seeing his eyes, this idea that he's coming back from that brink.
He goes over the wall. When he goes over the wall, he's transformed. He catches his own rage virus.
Yeah.
And then the moment of like helping and then getting to the light to see Selena is what is his cure for his rage virus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, dude. I love that. I really, really love that take. I love that interpretation.
Well, so then
we've been going on for a while here. So like, should we get to the end?
Let's get to the end. Yeah.
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 Okay. So after Jim leads this assault on the compound, they go to escape. Like Selena, Jim, and Hannah go to escape. But when they get to Frank's cab, West is there.
The leader guy. Yeah.
Yeah. The leader. And he shoots Jim because Jim killed his boys, right?
Yeah.
So Hannah, and I love this kill. I love this.
Yeah,
and
this is pretty cool.
She just took the wheel and backs him into the mansion
compound
so
or whatever.
Mailer can like grab him and yank him out.
Yeah,
and then they drive off to basically get Jim some help because
He's been shot.
Right.
And then they do the thing where they crash the gate.
Yeah.
And you think, is this the end of the movie? Because they do a slow-mo of, she's like, okay, we're going to do it. And they're driving towards the lock gate and they hit the gate and you get a shot of the back seat where Jim and Selena are like sort of, momentum spilling forward toward the camera.
Right. It's that 80s freeze frame thing at the end. Yeah.
And so you wonder, okay, what happened? Is this the end of the movie? Did they die? Did they make it? But then they go on to like the actual end of the film after that, another scene. Yeah.
Right. And this is where we get that second drop of the title, the 28 days later. So by the time we see them at the end of the movie, we're now 60 days from the first infection for the most part, effectively. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when we get this scene where they go, they hear an airplane, or Hannah hears an airplane going over, and they've used every bed sheet that they have in this cottage that they're holed up to create a giant tapestry that says hello. And again, now with your, you know, with what you were saying, this, that what we were talking about with this communication of hello, proving the humanity of it, right? Like you said, when Jim could have easily proven his humanity, but he couldn't, but like he was lost in that rage, right?
Yeah.
Fuck, I love that. God damn it. I'm going to be thinking about that for days, dude. That's fucking great. That's great. Because he does. He says hello the whole fucking movie. Except for the point where it could have saved his life.
Where it would be to us, it is obvious that you should just be, oh, whoa, whoa, it's me. It's me.
Right, right.
You just say that right away. He can't. Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. The second 28 days later sequence is like, it is a stark marked improvement in the picture quality.
Yeah. Yes.
Like drastic improvement. So they must have been shooting on digital for the first part and film for the second part, or vice versa, or whatever. I don't know how that works, but clearly they were shooting on different media, or they made an editing choice to be like, this is going to look like shit for the first part and look amazing in the second part.
They shot on DV is what they were using, digital video, and 2002 digital video too. So yeah. not like,
Which,
you know, the
shitty.
Current stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the effect we get. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yes, you're right. There is a marked difference in
the
picture
it
quality.
It looks beautiful. The last part. Yeah.
Pristine, right? Like the whites are very, very bright. The blue of the sky is very, very bright.
Things are sharper. They're not grainy. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There's a hope there, right? Like it looks like hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really interesting to me. I like that a lot, dude. God damn, man. I'm glad we talked about this because there are. Yeah. There's a lot of things that I like about this movie, and there's a lot of things that perplex me about this movie. And I think that discussing it is one of those things that, you know, you purge your thoughts, but you also gather other thoughts, like, you know, your stuff that you brought to this. And I appreciate all that. But one other thing I wanted to bring up here is that Jim again wakes up to a new world, where the infected are dying off, and now again, like you said, brighter, which I didn't put two and two together there, but you're right, brighter and more crisp and more defined world than what he left it when he passed out in the opera on the operating table. It's interesting in this idea of waking up. I mean, there's these parallels. Obviously, he wakes up at the beginning of the movie. He wakes up at the end of the movie. The use of hello. There are some really interesting parallels that run throughout the film. Love it. Love it.
Okay.
Love it. So,
end of the movie. What's the next part?
Next, do you have any other notes that you want to talk about? Anything additional that we didn't get to discuss?
Only the quibbles.
Yeah.
Only the little things. So Selena's hair is clearly done every time we see her. Like, I mean, I don't know that I would take the time to do that every day.
Right. Jim only has to shave the one time.
some of the shots, there are some very beautiful shots in this movie. The empty London shots look awesome. There's a sunset that looks amazing. Manchester burning looked incredible. There's some great shots in this film that I love for that stuff. How did Jim get untied when he jumps over the fence? I have a question about that. I'm sure you could just go imagine that he found a bayonet at the blockade or something. I don't know, whatever. That's not too
he
bad.
He did,
but,
though.
You know.
He did find a bayonet because he had that bayonet when he finds Jones.
Yeah. Okay.
He stabs him.
So that's probably the answer.
You could make that argument, right?
Yeah. The army guys are terrible with their ammo. They just blast indiscriminately at times.
Right. Right.
That's stupid to me.
Yeah.
Do the rage guys not want to attack each other?
I wonder, I don't know how that works. I don't know what the parameters are of that. Like, why wouldn't they attack one another? Is it as simple as zombies don't eat other zombies, they only eat human flesh?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know.
but these guys aren't cannibals. At least that's not expressly said that they are. They exist only to perpetuate the virus.
Yeah.
Not to consume those that they kill.
Yeah, because they don't eat the people that they maul.
No, they just want to turn them into like them. They want to assimilate. They're like the fucking Borg.
Just barf blood on them and then run on the next one. Yeah. Who in the scene where the rage guy is looking for Hannah and she's behind the mirror?
Yeah.
And he walks up to the mirror. What does the rage guy see? Like, what does the rage guy think is going on?
Oh, when he looks into the mirror?
Sees the mirror.
He sees his reflection.
Like,
damn, I look good in this hat.
Is he no longer self-aware? And thus, he just thinks it's another rage guy. So he's like, no, I'm not going to bite that guy. He's already a rage monster. Or,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because the kid says, I hate you.
Yeah.
So clearly the kid has some level of like, there's an I here.
Yeah.
Right. There's a being.
Right.
Do the adult rage guys have that same,
yeah,
there's a being here, or are they completely devoid of what we might call thought? And they only just like run around to like punch and kick and claw at stuff.
Are they're only on instinct, but that doesn't make sense if the boy is saying, I hate you.
If the boy can say, I hate you, clearly there's something else going on there too.
There's more to it. So my thought here is that this is not like your typical zombie virus that kills you and then resurrects you as an undead walking ghoul that, you know, murders and eats people. This is an infection that if there were a cure for it, these people would go back to normal. Yes.
Presumably, yeah.
Presumably. So they are, the soldiers and anybody else really, are just murdering these people en masse. And obviously they present a clear and present danger, so there's a reason for it, but like, there's no thought behind that. The actual thought behind it is what West brings up. He has no future. There's nothing left for him.
Yeah.
You know? And saying that to me, that means you don't believe that there ever could be a cure, that they ever could go back to what they were.
Yeah.
But realistically, they could.
Maybe they could.
Maybe they haven't died and come back.
At this point, who knows if there's even like the virus will die off in another week in a person, right?
Right.
Which I think also speaks to like those soldier guys, should have had a guard posted 24/7. I don't know why they don't do that.
Yeah, right.
That's fucking stupid too. But when they're blasting when they're blasting the people who are running in,
yeah,
they have the I got seven, I got four of them. Do you see that one get blown up? They have that kind of a feel to them.
Yeah.
So they exist in a space where those are not people anymore.
Yeah.
In any sense.
Yeah, they objectify them in a way.
Yeah.
Right? They don't look at them as human.
I mean, which in a way makes sense, but it also is just kind of telling of what is going on for them too, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I mean, this is obvious, but like clearly these are not typical zombies because you can just shoot them in the chest and they're dead too, right? So it's it's just a regular organism at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is like if the heart stops working, then the zombie stops working, or the rage beast stops
the
working.
Rage beast is done. Yeah.
So whereas with the zombie, it's the brain, right? That's at least that's what Romero set up.
You've got to zombie films are that way.
Yeah. So that's interesting. You were going to mention something.
When we do our ratings.
Oh, when we do our ratings. Okay. So why don't we, do you have anything else that you want to add?
No.
We're good. Okay. So let's jump into those ratings then. What do you give this out of five then? Out of five stars, remembering that you can use halves and quarters
quarters and stuff. This movie for me, my first viewing is like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My second viewing is in the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. For me, this movie aged poorly. Not entirely poorly,
mm-hmm.
but it did age in a couple of ways. One is it's sort of a victim of its own success, because to me, superior things came after it that cast it in like a slightly less gleaming light. In other words, when I saw it, it was the best zombie movie I'd ever seen the first time. And again, I'm not like a zombie file, but like of the few that I'd seen, it was the best one. But since then, you've got Shaun of the Dead, you've got Zombieland, you've got probably other things. The other Dawn of the Dead remake, which was I think close to that same time. But to me, those movies are slightly better overall movies, I think. And I think the reason is, upon this rewatch, I saw so many of the logistical and story seams that I didn't see the first time. And so it kind of comes apart a little bit. Not entirely. I do not dislike this movie, but I held it in somewhat less esteem than when I first saw it. So for me, this is like a 2.5 stars out of five, maybe three, something like that. Two and a half to
I
three.
can see that. Yeah, I can
Where
see that.
whereas when I first saw it, I would have rated it like a 4 stars out of five.
Yeah, I can see that. I think what you're saying is valid. I think that it definitely, going back and watching this after having watched other Alex Garland movies, the storytelling in this is, I'm not gonna say, I don't want to say pedestrian, but it is
How pedestrian
definitely
storytelling.
what terrible storytelling. Like, I would say that this is probably one of his lesser films. And this is like, I really like this movie. I really like this movie. It holds a special place in my heart for me. And with good reason. I like the zombie genre. I like that it reinvigorated the zombie genre. But I also remember that the reinvigoration of the zombie genre also gave us things like The Walking Dead, which went on for 63,000 years. I think that, like you, I rated it higher back then. I don't
Back
think I
then.
rated it as, yeah, I don't think I rated it as low as you do now, which I'm not saying. I mean, 2.5, that's middle of the road for me. And I've said this since the be since we adopted this 5-star rating thing. 2.5 being middle of the road, there's nothing wrong with that. That's
Nothing
a
wrong with that at all.
decent movie. It's not like a,
I still had a good time watching it.
So I think for me, I would rate this at 3. I think at the time when this movie came out, when I sat down and watched this movie the first time, I would have probably rated it a 5-star zombie movie. This would have been like top tier zombie movie for me. Nowadays, I don't think so. And again, it's not that I don't enjoy this movie. I enjoy this movie a lot, but I have to separate whether or not I like something versus whether or not I think it's, how good I think it is, right? Like how cohesive the story is, how how well the production is reflected in in the film. I mean, and I think that filming on DV is a choice. I think it definitely ruined the ability to move this forward in time as a as new versions of like DVDs and stuff became available, and like DVD to Blu-ray, Blu-ray to 4K. I don't think this is a movie that needs to be have a 4K rescan. You know what I mean? Like, what would it be? Pixels? You know, I mean, like just like blobs that move around on the screen. Like, there's just, I think it limits it a little bit. So yeah, I would say, I'm saying 3. I say 3 for this, and I'm interested to see what I think of the second one now.
Yeah, because I haven't seen that one at all. So I will have a different. Obviously, I will think something other than you, incredibly enough. But I will have a different thing too, because for this one, I have an original and a now viewing of it. So I never saw 28 Weeks Later. So when we do that one next, I will only have my current that viewing to go on, right?
I'm very excited to see what you think of this one, because I think what's interesting about this is like it's a very different take on this world. Like a very different take on this world. So that'll be next week. And Paul, you're going to be Jen again next week for 28 weeks later, I should say, not 28.
In just a few minutes, later. We will divorce.
And we will. Yes. Yes.
Remarry again later to do that.
I am writing up the divorce decree as I speak, because since we married ourselves, we're going to divorce ourselves. Right.
Yeah.
So judges need not apply. We don't need them. So, all right. So that is it for this week. Thanks for hanging in there with us. Thanks for coming back. I mean, we were gone for a couple of weeks there with nothing because fucking technology.
Because computers,
man.
Yeah.
Computers hate me and I love them. I love you, computers. All
I
of
love you,
you,
computers.
The rulers of my future world. So, yeah, there we go. We'll see you next week right here on the couch with 28 weeks later. Have a good night, everyone.
You have been listening to A View from the Couch. Visit our new website, thecouchpod.com, where you will find a calendar of upcoming releases, links to our podcast episodes, and you can sign up for our upcoming newsletter. You can also email our host directly at view@thecouchpod.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Every review helps us get noticed. Thanks for listening.